Hey, this is the Football Diary Podcast. Welcome. I'm trying to suppress my smugness here after we've literally just finished watching Manchester United beat Aston Villa 2-1. Did I say beat? I actually meant rob Aston Villa because, you know, United did not really deserve the win, but we'll absolutely take the 3 points. You'll get our post-match reaction to that as well. Also, Newcastle dispatching Nottingham Forest with a Bruno Guimaraes masterclass and informed Tottenham snatching an impressive late win over Brighton. But I'm going to start with Arsenal, I think. You can't not start with Arsenal when they win in the manner they did against West Ham 6-0, Miles. We'll start there and try and pick apart, first of all, how Arsenal did that, the way they sort of kept the pressure on Man City and Liverpool as well by this superb win. But also, we'll ask the question about David Moyes and West Ham, because I know Dave is it's not a big David Moyes fan, so we'll come on to that too. But starting with Arsenal then, Miles, what was the story of this game? Because 6-0... Didn't flatter Arsenal, did it? But West Ham were just a shambles.
It shows a really good mentality from Arsenal that we're not really used to seeing. But the fact that they came off the back of that win against Liverpool and also watched Liverpool and Man City win the day before, the pressure's up on them on the Sunday to try and keep up in the title race. And to win away from home 6-0 is a pretty good way of doing that, particularly when you consider, I think, were they 6 goals behind Man City on goal difference going into this game as well? True. So they've done exactly what they needed to do. And it was good to see that clinical side of Arsenal again, because we've been saying for a long time that we worried about where the goals are going to come from, and they distribute them across the pitch. They've been really effective from set pieces, which you don't necessarily expect to get a lot of joy from against West Ham with David Moyes there. So it was an excellent win for Arsenal. It's one that they'll really want to capitalise on and keep that title charge going.
Before we move on to West Ham, Dave, too much, because I know you've got a lot to say about the way they set up or didn't set up, as the case might be. Let's just focus on how Arsenal actually seized that game, because it was over by maybe 2-0. I think you could sense that they're just down tools mentally, West Ham. But Saka down the right felt like it was the way Arsenal really wanted to penetrate this West Ham defence. And I say penetrate, I use that term loosely, because it didn't take much to get through them, did it? It was a clinical performance from Arsenal, and one which kind of the whole midfield forwards kind of all kind of paid a part in as well, which is great to see for an attacking team.
Yeah, I think the way they started the game was, you know, they started on the front foot as they do most games now, but I think in terms of the quality of the chances they actually created in this game was the way they're playing at the minute. I think in terms of finishing these opportunities off, which, like you mentioned, was a big criticism that we had of them. But I thought Saka and I think Trossard, Martinelli, them three, they just couldn't cope with them, their movement. And again, we've seen how big a part set pieces have played for Arsenal. Is that 12 now? I thought, no, they were leading the way with 10 at the start of the day. And that's another take. Like, Gabriel and Saliba are absolute monsters aerially and a massive threat for any team. But I was just surprised about how easily West Ham just allowed them that space in the box. They didn't really have to do much to dominate in the air. It was fairly simple for them, but Arsenal took full advantage of that, and we've seen a couple of games this season where they've struggled in games and they've actually made the breakthrough through a set piece. It's become a different part of their armoury now. It's something we've not been used to actually over you know, probably the last decade. It's Arsenal haven't really been well known for obviously scoring from set pieces. If anything, it's been in their own box and conceding goals. So that's a massive breath of fresh air for Arsenal fans, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think Miles was right about Trossard as well. It was great to see him play so well. And I think he was one of a few players who really stepped up in this game and were ruthless in dispatching West Ham. And I think Declan Rice as well, with his kind of sorry, not sorry celebration to scoring an absolutely brilliant goal. It's kind of like rubbing salt in the wounds, really, Miles, wasn't it, for West Ham? But I thought Rice was brilliant. Anyone else stand out for you amongst a team performance, really, that was quite good?
I think Trossard is the one, and actually he's fulfilling a really good role in that squad. It kind of reminds me of Diogo Jota at Liverpool, where you're not quite sure whether he's ever going to be the star man, and he'll kind of fit into whatever attacking role you need him to when one of the traditional starters is out. And Trossard's found that really good position in the Arsenal squad where, I mean, he's got 50 appearances for him now, so Arteta clearly has a lot of trust in him, and he contributes in really important moments. I thought he was excellent again, and obviously he had a good impact against Liverpool the week before. So that's the kind of depth that Arsenal need to try and carry them over the line. They can't always rely on Saka and Martinelli, as they've kind of found out this season. So having that depth is massive. And you're right, Declan Rice. It's a dream return to West Ham, wasn't it? What, two assists and a goal. And he took his goal. Fantastic. I mean, he was given all the space in the world. The fact that two Arsenal players missed the ball before it got to Rice and he still wasn't closed down. It was a bit favourable for him, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I'll stay on you, Miles, actually, for the kind of final conversation on Arsenal, really. And a 6-0 win kind of, again, closes that goal difference gap massively. It creates daylight between themselves and Spurs as well. I think it's a 5-point cushion now between third and fourth. But more importantly, it keeps a 2-point gap between them and Liverpool at the top. Mm. How are you seeing the title race right now? That's 4 wins in a row for Arsenal too, which I think psychologically is a big deal. So is momentum on their side, do you think?
I don't think I'd go as far as saying it's on their side, because all of those teams seem to have some momentum. Obviously, Liverpool dropping points against Arsenal last week and maybe dampen them a little bit. But when City are coming through as strong as they are, the good thing for Arsenal is they are keeping up with that. They've not let themselves fall behind. And that's really impressive. How is the title race looking? Quite open. I think it's really easy to just assume that Man City, because they've just been this juggernaut in the past that goes through and blows through the second half of the season, it's really easy to assume that they'll do that again, and they're showing signs of it to a degree. But while Arsenal are keeping pace with them, then the title race is open. It's whether they can keep that consistency all the way to the end of the season. At the moment, it looks like maybe they will. I'm excited by it.
Yeah, it's a title race that hasn't been a three-way title race for a number of years. It's always been two in the last 5 at least, doesn't it? So yeah, refreshing to say the least. But let's move on to West Ham, shall we, Dave? Now, there's a lot of calls from West Ham fans to get David Moyes out. And that's a difficult position to kind of take, because West Ham are in a really good position in the league still, despite this result. They did have a decent run of form going into this game. They're 8th in the table for a reason. Obviously got a European trophy to the name and still performing pretty well in Europe this season too. So why, this game aside, I guess, why are West Ham fans unhappy with what they're seeing?
It's crazy, isn't it? Like I was saying to you earlier that about Moyes' future has surely got to be in doubt. And I mentioned a few weeks ago, Miles, I think they had a bad result. And you said, but look how they've performed like, over the last few years. They've not actually lost that many games. And it is a really strange one, because you see the promise in that squad and you see the players that they do have in there, and obviously who they brought in last season, the last couple of years, obviously the Pakitar, you know, Kudus, and these are massive players that really should be playing for the top 6 teams, top 4 teams even. And I think that's where you've got to sympathise, I think, with West Ham fans, because I think they should be doing better, to be honest. And I think what's got to them where they are this season is the individual brilliance of some of those players. Kudus has won matches on his own. Pakitar has been absolutely superb as well. Jared Bowen, another player who's been key for them over the last couple of years. And the question is always going to be, when are they going to kick on? When is there going to be, you know, this change in... I think it's the style of play as well, let's be honest. Because in this game, fair enough, you're playing against Arsenal, but in a lot of the games, they set up quite reservedly. It's very hard to play against. Don't get beat. But actually, I think they just want to see some more free-flowing football and probably what they are.
I'm going to have to interject there, because I think West Ham can do better than 8th is the kind of question I would ask. Can they really? And like the teams above them, it suddenly becomes a big step up in quality from 8th up to even 6th or 5th, doesn't it? As we can see with the Premier League being so competitive at that part of the table at the minute. So I guess the question for you, Miles, is what is it that's making them happy? But also, how do they step up, if that's what you want to call it? Because I'm also of the opinion, I think, that David Moyes has done a great job with the team. I think he's got them into some places they wouldn't have dreamed of going previously by fashioning a really effective team that knows how to win. But that's not an always brilliant thing to say about a team. They know how to win and they can win, or not lose at least. Sometimes it feels like West Ham just don't want to lose. But I think Dave's point is, with the players that he's got at his disposal and the money they've clearly been able to spend, could they do better?
I don't think so, in all honesty. I think you've got to be careful what you wish for, because how many teams have we seen get to a position where they're in 8th or around that sort of area, knocking on the door of Europe? Obviously, West Ham have gone beyond that. And then they make a managerial change and it completely backfires. Yes, they've spent money, but have they spent the same amount of money as someone like Newcastle are able to, who are just above them now? Like, look at the teams above West Ham right now. Mm-hmm. You've got Newcastle, we know the story there, Man United, Tottenham, Arsenal, City, Liverpool, and then of course Villa, who I think are a bit of an exception in there because they have Unai Emery. Unless you can go out and get a manager of that sort of quality at West Ham, then I think you've got to be really happy with what you've got. Because let's not forget, they're off the back of winning a European trophy. They're still in the Europa League. To be eighth in the Premier League is excellent. And yes, they've got some good attacking players. Defensively, I think that squad's quite weak, if we're honest. How many of their back line get into any of the teams above them on a regular basis? I don't think many. And I think that obviously showed in this game. They were so open at the back. And normally you've got Alvarez who kind of drops in and helps mop that up a little bit. And he had quite a poor game, obviously was hooked for Calvin Phillips. And when he gets some fitness, then maybe we'll see a different side to West Ham. But I think you have to be careful with West Ham. Obviously you want a club to have ambition. And I think David Moyes has matched their ambition to a massive degree. You don't want to get carried away with that and then kind of bite off more than you can chew. It's a slow building project. Some of those players will come in and go. That's the nature of a club of West Ham's size, where they're big enough to attract those players, but not quite at that elite level to hold on to them. I don't really know what I'd do if I was West Ham. I think I'd be grateful, to be honest.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Bournemouth's dilemma when they stayed up under, obviously, Gary O'Neill and made the decision to go to Antonio Raiola because of the style of football fundamentally being so important to fans. And you can kind of see why that kind of vision is positive for fans to see. And I think that's the dilemma West Ham fans have now. Do they want to have success or relative success, really? Like you say, eighth in the Premier League is pretty good going, I would say, considering the competition. Or do they want to still have that, but do it in some kind of different style? And again, you're no better off as a team. So why take that gamble? And it is a gamble, isn't it? Changing managers, Dave, at this stage of any season is going to be difficult to kind of find the right manager to step in. So if you're Moyes out, what's the alternative?
I think if we mentioned at the end of last season, though, and we said when he won, obviously, the European competition at the end of last season, we thought this is the perfect moment for him to leave the club, hand the reins over to a new coach, a new manager, and a new chapter for West Ham. And I think that is what should have happened. You look at the players that brought in, you look at Kudus, Alvarez, who's, you know, two really good big talents. Coming from Ajax, a team like Ajax, does not replicate the style of David Moyes. Like it's complete contradiction altogether. So I think they need a new path. I think fans are on to that as well. I don't think Moyes has done a bad job at all. He's done very well, really. But I think this is as far as he can take the club.
But Dave, who takes them further? Like, what is further? Realistically, right now, you're right. They've got some very talented players. Where should West Ham be then? If it's not eighth and still in the Europa League, realistically, where should West Ham be if you think Moyes hasn't done enough?
Well, I think you make an interesting comparison. You mentioned Emery. I mean, you look at Villa last year, look at where they were when he first came in. They were in complete disarray. And they were on the verge of, you've mentioned, obviously, if Gerrard had stayed, you thought they'd probably get relegated, which was very realistic prospect. And I don't think, if I'm honest, I think there's real potential in that West Ham team. I think there's a few positions, like mentioned defensively. There's probably a couple of slots that need filling. And I think a striker as well, because I don't think Jack Bowen particularly likes playing in that position up front. I think we like to see him a little bit like an inside forward. But I just think that's a good comparison. I think if you swap managers, let's just say Moyes get Aston Villa tomorrow. And then you've got Emery. How much better are we doing?
I don't know. I think Villa's squad is better as well. They probably would be. Maybe they'd be above Newcastle and they'd be above Villa at that point, probably. But I don't know if I would expect much more of this current West Ham squad.
Obviously, it's a big ask. And I think, obviously, Emery coming into Villa will have probably looked at the opportunities that he had and thought, oh, do you know what, this squad, I can work with it. I think there's a drastic difference between the two teams and themselves, and I think technically Villa are just on another level, but there are players in that West Ham team who I think, and I don't think it's outrageous to say, I think they get into Villa's team. I think Kudus are good, and I think Alvarez will definitely be a good one. Jared Bowen,
good options. I don't know who they take out of our team, but hey, let's not make this a Villa West Ham conversation. I can see Mike twitching.
Wow. No, I'm just keen to move on, really, because I feel like we've figured out that the David Moyes conundrum continues to be just that, doesn't it? It's not something we can definitively answer, because football is a difficult difficult place to be when you're that part of the Premier League table. And as Villa found out, it can sometimes work out. But as other teams have fallen out by the wayside by making that kind of change, trying to spend that little bit more to break the top six, for example, it's not always a bed of roses. But in terms of the teams competing around the area, we're going to move on to Newcastle next, who won 3-2 at Forest. A real end-to-end game separated by, I think it's fair to say, the magic of Bruno Guimarães as well. And a contentious penalty decision, which we'll talk through in a moment. But I think this kind of game underlines really, and this season really underlines the importance of Bruno to Newcastle. He's kind of the quality that their team like them that's aspiring to do better needs with that kind of magic to steal a game like this, isn't he, Miles? And I guess the question is, if they don't get Europe this season, can they hang on to him? Because he's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, there's got to be a lot of teams watching him because there aren't a lot of midfielders of his ilk that are available right now. And if it is true that Newcastle, although they have all this money, are kind of struggling with the profit and sustainability laws, they might have to cash in on a big asset. And I think they've got to do everything they can to make sure that's not Bruno. And you could see by his celebration of the second goal, he loves being at that club. Like, he's a cult hero there. They clearly admire him. He's had a very different kind of season this season compared to last year. Obviously, last year he played a bit further up the pitch. He was getting goals more often when he came in. And I think the introduction of Sandro Tonali, it was meant to free him up to do that more. Now, obviously, the way that Newcastle's season's gone has meant that that's not really been a factor. So he's been a bit quieter, but still incredibly effective and efficient. He probably doesn't grab the headlines as often as he used to, and it was good for him to do that in this game because he's an incredibly dynamic midfielder. He's someone that I know, if I was an opposition player, would be a nightmare to play against because he's tenacious, he's got excellent technique, he'll run all day. And I think you saw the quality he has in both finishes, actually.
Absolutely.
The second one looks like a better goal, but actually to keep his mind on that ball as it comes over from Trippier and to kind of cushion that volley as well as he did, I think that took a lot of technique as well. So he's a fantastic player and one that Newcastle will be looking to build a future around, absolutely.
Well, he kind of hinted in his post-game interview that the goal for Newcastle is to get into the Champions League. If not the Champions League, then Europe, you know, that has to be the aim. I don't know if that was a hint from him to say that if that doesn't happen, I may be off. But I wouldn't blame him because he's the kind of player, Dave, isn't he, that deserves to play at an elite level. And as Miles was saying, the finishes for both of his goals, and I think the first one was probably better in that respect, the way he did cushion it from an angled pass. Was it with the outside of his foot almost as well to get it into the goal? Beautiful.
Completely front of his foot.
It was amazing. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of difference in a game like this where Forest were struggling to score and struggling to convert. They needed a player that clinical and that class, and Newcastle have got him. So he is one of those players they can't afford to lose, really, is he? He's just class.
I think if you look at him and Tonali, I mean, who could they afford to lose more? I think Tonali, and I think especially with some of the rumours at the beginning of the season are saying about he's not settling like the way he would like to. And I think obviously what Bruno has come in and given to this club at such a pivotal time when on the back of, you know, over a decade of absolute dross, really, for being honest. You know, I don't think they can afford to lose him. But the thing is, like you mentioned, it just looks like he loves playing for this club. I don't think Newcastle were particularly convincing in this game, but they were really decisive in really crucial moments of the game. Like you mentioned, the second goal was a great strike as well. In actual fact, the goalkeeper does this service actually to the beauty of that goal because he actually gets to it. It almost looks like he should keep it out, but I think he does so well to get a palm on it. But his first goal is out of this world. And I think, like, I do agree with you, Miles. I think his game has actually been quite different. I think that's probably is down to a lot of players missing. I think there's been a bit of instability in that team. I think, obviously, a lot of players have had to be shoehorned into different positions as well. And that's definitely not helped him and the rest of the team, to be honest. But in this game, that was a massive win for them. If they lose that or draw, you have to question kind of, because what before this it was one win in six. Obviously, that's two in seven now. That's a platform which they can build from.
Well, I just think defensively as well, there's still concerns there for Newcastle fans. And they haven't had a clean sheet since Christmas, I believe. Dan Burn's been under fire as well for the last few games. Mm. He's not exactly been watertight, has he? some shaky performances all around defensively. And I think this is a similar defense to what they had last season as well. And we were singing their praises. So yeah, something's changed there, hasn't it? I guess the question, Miles, is if they're to remain competitive, whether they get Europe or not, what investment do they need? What kind of positions do you think they will be targeting next?
I think there was a player on the pitch that I wouldn't be surprised to see Newcastle go in for in the summer. Morgan Gibbs-White looks like the exact kind of player that Newcastle need. And I think could be quite attainable. Sorry, Forest fans. I know that that's the last player they'll want to lose. But I think that Newcastle, it's a funny one because they leapfrogged kind of their expectations last year by making the top four without actually putting in as much investment as I think people expected. Obviously, they spent big money on Isak and since then Guimaraes and Tonali. But generally speaking, the squad's still, it's not as developed as it needs to be. And I think they've been so battered by injuries this year that it's proven that actually the investment needs to happen everywhere. Like you talk about the defence and how good the defence was last year. But then this year, obviously Nick Pope's been out for a while now. That really affects them and the way that that defence is carried. Obviously, they brought a holding midfielder in to support that defence and he's been out. So I think they've just got to assess where they can strengthen in depth a lot. And there are players that will be on the market for sure. And if Forest aren't careful, they could be looking at having to offload some players if they get relegated at this rate. I am worried about them, you know.
Very true. Well, you've moved me on nicely to the Forest conversation because it was a fairly back and forth game, wasn't it? Both teams going at each other kind of one after the other. And Forest fans, I think especially, will feel like they should have had a penalty given to them for a foul on Awoniyi. And I've seen this in the moment in real time and I thought to myself, that's a penalty. I think it felt like a clumsy set of circumstances from the defence especially. And on the replay, I still feel like it's a penalty, Dave. Do you? Do you feel like they should have had something for that?
I think the angle from behind, it looks as though he doesn't have full control of the ball. It's not really clear to see how much contact there is. But when you see the angle, and I think they showed it in the studio in Sky after, and when Jamie Redknapp actually says something, the penalty, that normally, even if he's saying it's probably a penalty, because no disrespect to Jim Redknapp, but he's not my most favoured pundit. But
wonder why.
You can see that the goalkeeper lifts his arm, and the player is obviously going through to try and get control of the ball. And his boot obviously catches him with his arm, his raised arm. Yeah. And for me, it just looks like but the problem is this is the thing, isn't it? VAR is never going to overturn that because even if there's 20% uncertainty, it's 80% in favour of a penalty, they won't overturn the decision because it's just ridiculous. And I can really sympathise, I think, with Forest fans because that was a pivotal moment in the game. If they score, if that get a penalty there and they score, they'll probably go on and win. And then, and obviously, Newcastle will score straight after.
Can I say, and it's rare that we get this, I really disagree. I feel like I might be in a minority here. I didn't think it was a penalty. I'll tell you, the reason I didn't think it was a penalty is because I think Awoniyi is the one that initiates the contact. The thing is, how often are you told, as a goalkeeper, make yourself as big as possible? And he has done that. He's spread his frame out, but I'm not convinced he's the one that makes the contact. Awoniyi obviously receives a bit of a nudge from Botman, which yeah. I think, if anything, that might have been more likely to have been a foul. But I think it's shoulder to shoulder. I think he can get away with that one just about. And then Awoniyi obviously goes forward and he initiates the contact. He brings his leg through the goalkeeper. So I don't think you could give a foul from the goalkeeper on that because he's already there. Like, what do you want the goalkeeper to do? Just come out with his arms down? Well, he spread himself big. He's not gone to the player. He's gone towards the ball when the player's initiated contact.
I see your point.
I wasn't convinced.
I think, don't you think, in the combination of the clumsiness from both Botman and the goalkeeper, it was just a little bit all-round contribution to him falling over. Rather than one isolated bit of contact or no contact, it was a combination of them both just not really defending that well.
True. Well, I don't know, actually. I think maybe it is Botman defending very well because he outmuscles him. And that's not what you expect for a 1 year. 1 year is a very powerful forward. And realistically, you can't criticize, you can't, it's not a joint foul, that's not possible. If Oanyi can't stay on his feet, so he's a bit off balance from that push, but then he initiates, I think if anything, that's more so the reason that he initiates the contact with Dubravka. I wasn't convinced by it. I can see, I think it's hard for the ref, because the ref was very far behind the play, because the ball came over the top, didn't it, from the keeper?
Yeah.
And the ref was not ready for a one-year to break that quickly. So he ends up really far behind it and only gets one angle of it. And that angle was the one that Dave's talking about, where it looks like he's quite out of control. So perhaps it would have been more beneficial for him to have a second look at it. But I still think he would have stuck with his original decision. Well, probably not, because as soon as he gets called to the monitor, they normally change their mind. But I wasn't that mad at it. Maybe if I was a Villa, maybe if it was for Villa, then I'd be fuming.
Well, I think with Forest as well, they'd be more frustrated. I think the fact that they've conceded more goals from set plays. I think I've been reading online fans' reactions, and that's just been a frustration of the since 2024 really has started, and it's been a difficult start to this calendar year for them, really, hasn't it, Dave? Encouraging signs going forward, as you say, Gibbs White's been fantastic, and I think a couple of their goals were really, really well taken, weren't they, both of them? But defensively, yeah, it must be a frustration for them to still see them conceding goals as they are. I know they're without players at the African Cup of Nations still, some key players too, but are you confident that Forest can turn it around or can come away from danger? Let's not talk about any points deductions potentially. Do you think they've got enough just do it on paper at least?
I think they were missing a couple of big players. I thought Danilo was really missed in that midfield area. Obviously, they're missing Sangare as well, and then Mangala, who I think will really add to this team when they obviously come back in. I wouldn't like you, Miles. I thought Dan Byrne against Alanga was an absolute recipe for disaster, to be honest. He did prove that in the first half, although I thought Dan Byrne actually improved a lot in the second half. Yeah, you're right, Mike. I think there's a lot to be positive about. I think that link up between and that understanding between Gibbs White and Delanga is there for all to see. I think a big miss, actually, and not many will probably say this, but I think Chris Wood going out of the team again is disrupting a little bit. He was in some real form. Obviously, a 1 year with the injury that he had, it's kind of not really given them much choice, but it's probably given more game time, more minutes than probably they liked. And obviously, your other option is Divock Origi, who, let's be honest, just looked a shadow of what he was when he was at Liverpool. That we knew that he was somehow. But I think it will be a real punch in the gut for them, this particular result, because I think they'll look back on that. I think we really should have had something out of that game. Newcastle weren't particularly great. And Forest had some good chances and good opportunities. But they're definitely just missing a few players. And I think we just could give them a bit more stability in that lineup.
It's an interesting one with Forest, isn't it, though? Because you are right, defensively is probably where they looked weak. Because if you look at Forest's forward line, like, let's take the front four in this game. Gibbs White is excellent, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the England squad very soon. I think he's been brilliant this season. Then they've brought in Alanga, who I think still could have done a job at United this year. I think he's another excellent player. Oanyi is a fantastic young forward who looks like he could just get better and better. And Callum Hudson-Odoi was one of the hottest prospects in Europe for a long time. Plus, they've just brought Gio Reyna in on loan. How many clubs have better forward lines than that right now in the Premier League? I'll tell you one thing, it's not 15, and Forest are 16th and 2 points off the relegation zone. So they need something to click and a bit more organisation, definitely. I think Sangare coming back will be huge. But what if Forest do get a points deduction? They're only 2 points above relegation now. That could be it. Like they needed to get themselves into a better position. Like, you look at Everton, obviously they are in the relegation zone, but they had that 10 points and they're still within touching distance. They managed to string enough results together in that period of time that kind of got them at least in the conversation again. If Forest were hit with 10 points now, they're bottom and they look really out of it. It doesn't look like they would have enough to get themselves out. That could be really problematic.
Do or die for Forest at the minute, isn't it? They need to keep picking up points wherever they can. And I think missed opportunities, like trying to get a point even in this game, will be gutting for them, especially if that's what cost them at the very end of the season. But moving on, guys, I want to shed some light on Tottenham, because they've had some great form lately as well. They beat Brighton 2-1. Much different Spurs to the team that lost 4-2 to Brighton back in December, if you remember. That was a an awful game for them, but Brighton really turned it on. However, the difference this time, I think, is obviously some key players coming back for a start. Romero, Van de Ven were both missing last time. They were a key part of this result, I think. James Maddison, of course, coming back, and Son back from international duty as well, with a superb assist as well. For Brennan Johnson's winner late into injury time. So a great way to win a game. And I think momentum's with Spurs at the minute, isn't it? In some ways, for that top four race, Miles. I can see them securing that if they continue to play like they did in this game.
Yeah, because the depth that squad's got now is a lot stronger when they've got everyone fit again. Like you say, obviously having Son come back from the Asian Cup, and Saar as well. He was excellent in this game and obviously took his goal really well. This Spurs squad has a lot more talent than I think we anticipated. Because when you think about the summer, you just acknowledge that Kane left and you think, well, that leaves Spurs in a worse position. But actually, Richarlison's come into his own. He's been far, far better of late. They were able to bring someone like Brennan Johnson off the bench, which is huge. I think even Timo Werner plays a massive role. So Spurs have got a lot of quality in the squad all of a sudden. I think they're still a little bit light in some areas, but generally speaking, the vibes are good at Spurs under Postecoglou. The squad is stronger and they seem to have a really good chemistry moving forward. They're playing really nice football at times. Yeah. Like you're right, Son's assist was excellent, but actually even just the build-up that they had in this game was really strong. And we know that Brighton are really capable of playing some nice football themselves, and Spurs reduced the opportunities that they had massively. I think they could control the midfield. Bentancur, he just looks fantastic in that Spurs midfield, doesn't he? So, yeah, I'm nervous as a Villa fan now watching Spurs.
I was going to say that's the next question for you, Dave, really, because the competition to get into the Champions League, whether that is four or five places that qualify, we don't know yet, but there's a good chance it's probably five. But let's say finishing fourth is what they need to do. Do you think at full strength, Spurs, Dave, look like a Champions League level team? I mean, obviously with Villa being the sort of benchmark for them to kind of aim for at the minute, and any bias aside for you, Miles, when I come to you, Dave, do you think that's the level they're at, Spurs?
I'm going to say yeah, because I think one of the things that they've had go for them, their recruitment last summer is some of the best recruitment they've done in a long time. You look at Vicario's come in, who looks well at home. Van de Ven looks, he could be in the team of the season by the end of the year. He's been absolutely superb. And I think them getting that recruitment right has actually given them a massive boost in terms of it's not actually let the absence of Harry Kane really affect them too much, because other players, almost mentioned Richarlison, is probably thinking, well, hang on, I've got an opportunity now to... I think it's almost a bit of a confidence boost in a way, because you know you've got an opportunity, you really want to work extra hard to ensure that you make the most of that opportunity. So I could see them playing in the Champions League next year. I do think they need probably a couple more players. I think maybe another attacker. I think they probably still need an out-and-out forward. I think the jury's still out on Richarlison. I think, like you say, he's much improved, but the amount of money that they paid for him, you would fully expect that and more, really. But I think they probably need another goal scorer with that big void of Harry Kane in there now. Although I'm not sure how Bayern Munich are feeling about it all at the minute.
And I guess that begs the question, Miles, what are Spurs aims this season? Is it kind of Champions League or nothing? Or do they measure success just by qualifying for Europe, whatever means that may be?
I think it has to be Champions League, doesn't it? Because we are talking about a year where five teams getting in. I don't know if I think there are five teams better than Spurs right now in the league. Maybe you could argue. It depends if United get themselves back into the conversation. Obviously, they've taken a step towards that today. But the players that Spurs have at their disposal, yeah, they should be in the Champions League. I don't think they do very well in the Champions League, but realistically, that's got to be their aim. I don't think they can be happy with anything less than that right now, because they've got no other front to compete on. They're not challenging anywhere else. So why not give everything you've got to the league at this stage? They have to.
Well, moving on to the next match, unfortunately, Miles, that's going to have to be United's win over Aston Villa. As we talk about Champions League qualification, I think it's probably still optimistic, Dave, to think about United qualifying for the Champions League, isn't it? Because I do feel like this performance was very jammy. It could have been a lot different, I think, if Villa had just taken the chances, but United took theirs. And that was the difference in the end, wasn't it? Because I don't think any United fan came away from that feeling completely convinced by the performance, especially.
It was very tense, very stressful. I think there were similarities between the two teams, especially in the attacking thirds. I think United were too forceful in trying to play that ball over the top of them diagonals as well. I think it just handed possession over way too easily to Villa at times, and the pressure was straight back on United then. And then Villa just not getting those moments right in terms of that the final pass or the decisiveness in front of goal. It was one of those days where it seemed like every effort on goal, and I said this to Mars before we came on here, is that every single effort they had, it was almost like they caught it too sweet. It was almost like you wanted an effort where you didn't quite catch it and it just kind of, you know, scuffed into the corner, or everything was pretty much straight at Onana as well, which that we were really fortunate, I felt, in this game. Yeah. But I think there are a few bonuses. I think in terms of how we defended, I thought we defended really well. I think Diogo Dalo has been absolutely superb this season. I think I've got to say that. I think the way that he's defended and he's come on, I think going forward, he looks a threat, and his cross for the winning goal from McTominay was out of this world. So it's nice to be able to give him a bit of credit, because I think he's had a lot of stick, particularly over the last couple of years. And I think Rafael Varane was an absolute monster aerially in the box. And I always fear, I think, because Villa are actually quite good from set pieces, and actually we handled it quite well. So I'm not particularly happy. And I said to you that I didn't really enjoy watching that game at the end of it. It really wasn't calming at all. But when is watching these days?
Very true. Well, you talked about how United defended fairly well and also attacked fairly well. And that kind of brings the point about how the midfield was so anonymous for United, but also so effective for Villa, Miles. I think that's where they really took a stranglehold on the game, especially after United scored and suffocated that midfield area. I always thought they'd do really well playing between the lines. United's lines were like chasms at times, and Villa really exploited that quite well, really, didn't they?
You're talking like Villa won the game.
It feels like it in some ways.
You set me up for that question by going United were terrible, but Villa were good, weren't they? Well, you've just won 2-1, so I appreciate you being gracious about it. Dave says he didn't enjoy watching that game. Imagine being a Villa fan knowing that you're about to record a podcast with two Man United fans 10 minutes after the game finished.
Hence me being gracious, man, you know. I'm trying my best there, you know. Devil's advocate and all that.
I appreciate it. No, do you know what? There were some positives for Villa in the game, definitely, but ultimately it's another 3 points dropped against Man United. Realistically, we should have 6 points against United this season, and then at that point we'd be 14 points clear of them, and we've got the top five sewn up. And instead now we've let the gap be 5 points, and that's scary, and that kind of naivety could cost us at the end of the season. The midfield was strong, definitely. The second half it was really strong. And Dave says about how well Dalot played. In the second half, he was definitely United's best defender. He was absolutely excellent. In the first half, I thought he had a torrid time because he kept getting stuck between Moreno and Ramsey. Mm. And it meant that there was always space for one of them, and he didn't get enough support from United's midfield. And that was really telling. And then I think had Luke Shaw not come off, Villa would have kept attacking down that side, but instead they wanted to exploit Victor Lindelof with Bailey's pace, and it worked really, really well. And then they took Bailey off. Now, you know me, in Unai we trust, but there were a couple of things that I looked at this game and thought, I'm not sure he got that one right. I think if Torres is fit enough to be on the bench, he's fit enough to start. Because if Longley goes off injured 2 minutes in, you've got to play Torres. So I'd play him anyway, because there were so many times where Villa were trying to play the ball out and they're just missing Torres's ability. Yeah. His ability to play a ball into the final third is massive, and we've missed that for the last three games now. Massive. Like, it really, really showed. Three games at home, at least. That worried me. His reluctance to keep Bailey and Diaby on the pitch at the same time baffles me. And he always brings Zaniolo on too late. There was a period where United were on the ropes, and if we kept pressing them the way that we were, it would have worked. Onana was under so much pressure on the ball at times from Watkins, and then they sat off him. They took Bailey off, and they waited to the 88th minute when they were 2-1 down to bring Zaniolo on, who would press. So I am frustrated. I'll be honest, I'm really, really frustrated by that result.
I love the contrast between sheer frustration and absolute relief from all of us. It was such an odd game, wasn't it? And I know we kind of were all bemoaning how crap the ref was as well, because there were some really weird, inexplicable yellow cards dished out and a lot of diving going on from both sides that wasn't really treated in the same way. So yeah, it was a weird, inconsistent, niggly game. And I'm going to ask you, Dave. I'm trying to look at where the Premier League table is going to sit, forecast what the future is going to be, and whether we'd be happy with where our teams are now. Now, assuming City win their game in hand and take top spot, I actually think the top seven is pretty much going to stay the same. Do you feel that, Dave? And if so, if United were to stay in this position now, would you be happy with that necessarily?
I don't know whether I'd be happy with it. I think considering how the first half of our season has gone, like, it's completely understandable where we are in the table. But I think with the return of some players, I think we've had, obviously, losing Luke Shaw, we don't know how bad that injury could be, and losing Lisandro Martinez, who's going to be out until probably the beginning of April, which is, again, a massive loss as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if it stayed that way. If it stayed that way, and I'm sure Miles would be very happy if they could even sneak into the fourth spot, who knows. But I just feel as though we've been too inconsistent this season to merit a top four spot, and we need to pretty much go through the second half of the season relatively unscathed, really, in terms of losing. We've had too many losses and too many draws. And we've just it just looks like we're just starting to click in attacking moments. I thought today we were looked out of sorts. I think there were moments in the game where we had opportunities. I think Lonaka was our best attacking player along with Hoyland. And they looked the more likely players to kind of produce something. But at times, and I agree, I think that the midfield is just, it just looks completely off at times. I thought there was a lack of stability there, and it was really crying out for a change, I think, in midfield. And obviously when Ten Hag obviously brought McTominay in, they'd already equalised at that point. But when it was 1-0 down, Villa were completely on top.
So I guess same question to you, Miles. I mean, obviously Villa in fifth at the minute. There's still that cushion between Villa and United, which I can't see closing anytime soon, to be fair. But I guess the question for you is, do you think fifth would be an acceptable way to finish the season? Or are you, having tasted the top four now, are you thinking that has to be the aim?
I think it still has to be the aim, but I don't think any Villa fan can say that finishing fifth in the Premier League would be a bad season in any stretch of the imagination. It'd be fantastic. I want us into the top four just to get that certainty, because there's still a chance that that wouldn't be enough for Champions League in fifth. But it all depends on whether we can actually get a fit squad at some point, because today looked better. The options we had on the bench looked stronger. But let's remember, when we started this game without any of our first choice back line, realistically, we're going to play Luca Dean, Pau Torres, Mings and Konsa across the back. We couldn't field any of them. And that has massively hindered us over the last few weeks. And that could be the difference between us getting into the top four. Missing Duran means we've got no options to change Watkins if he's not having a great game. We are thin on the ground at the moment. And I worry that that might let other teams catch up. But then saying that, Dave's right, United have just been hit with a string of injuries. So I don't know. I've been frustrated. Obviously, I went to the FA Cup game as well, and it was the same problems where we were just really struggling to create things out the back. We're trying to play the ball out slowly from the back again, but Longley and Carlos's last ball just is nowhere near as strong. We're relying massively on Moreno getting down the touchline, but that's really problematic at times. And United dealt with him a lot better than I thought they were going to in the second half, because the first half looked like he had space. So we've just got to work out how we unpick the locks sometimes, because we've got the players to do it. Like Douglas Luiz and Tielemans in the middle are so creative that if we want to get top four, we need them at their best. And we saw spells of that in this game, but only short spells. There was a 15-minute period where we were battering United, and then they just stopped. And you can't afford to do that in a top four race, because they did that in the away fixture and gave away a massive lead. And they did it in this game and failed to capitalise on a chance to win this. And that does make me nervous a little bit.
So to finish the pod, guys, I'm going to put it to you. Two of the biggest games across the continent in the Bundesliga, first of all, and also La Liga as well. So I'll start with you, Miles, and stay. I'll talk about the Bundesliga, really. Obviously, Bayer Leverkusen are unbeaten so far this season, and they faced their stiffest challenge yet, really, in Bayern Munich. And this was really a test of how far they've come as a team and how realistic their chances of winning the Bundesliga are. And wow, that was answered emphatically, wasn't it? With a not flattering 3-0 win. They fully deserved that scoreline. It probably could have been more. It was a trouncing for Leverkusen. But what does this mean for the Bundesliga? Is the landscape shifting now? I suppose it depends what happens to Xabi Alonso next season, doesn't it?
I think there's a lot that will happen to their squad because some of the players there have shone so much. So I think they'll be drawing attention from across Europe now. And Alonso, obviously, I think we can all say that we imagine he's going to end up at either Liverpool or maybe even Bayern.
I heard Madrid mentioned. I was like, do you know what? That could happen because Ancelotti's on his way out soon, isn't he?
Well, he's just signed a new deal, Ancelotti, didn't he, for next year? But it looks like he could be the long-term successor at some point. It's interesting that it's the three clubs that he's played for that are knocking on the door because it looked like Ancelotti was destined for Brazil and that's obviously fallen through. So there'll be people fighting over him and there'll be people fighting over a lot of that squad. Like, just look at the two fullbacks. I was saying in January, I was desperate for Villa to try and get a leg up on a few other clubs and going for Frimpong. And now that could be impossible. They managed to pick up Grimaldo from Benfica for barely like any attention was on him. And I don't really understand why, because he's an excellent fullback. And they both shone in this game. Obviously, both got goals. Frimpong's goal was fantastic.
Technically brilliant.
And I think, yeah, you just saw the positive attitude of Bayer Leverkusen right now. Bear in mind, this is a team that in Germany that allay with Bayer Leverkusen because they very rarely get it over the line. But the mentality seems to be there. Whereas Bayern, on the other hand, look rattled. Yeah. I just want to read Thomas Müller's quotes from after the game. So he gave a very passionate and animated interview to Sky Germany after the game. And you know what Müller's like. He's a big character, but he's quite happy around football. But he looked livid. And he said, "You can see some symptoms on the pitch. I'm frustrated. I miss from us players. We're much braver in training. We lack courage. I have to quote Oliver Kahn here. We're too caught up in our heads. It's okay to feel pressure, but there needs to be energy. We're playing from A to B and C. We have no freedom. That's missing in our games. Sometimes you have to speak about the players. It's not just the coach. We have many players of international caliber on the field. It's also about a certain level of game intelligence. We need to step up." Now, this is Bayern Munich we're talking about, who just win the Bundesliga routinely every year, a Champions League contenders, and they've gone out and invested heavily in their squad and brought in the likes of Harry Kane to try and cement that European excellence. But Bayer Leverkusen look like a far better side than them right now. It's not luck anymore. It's not just a good run of form. This is an excellent team. And they've been fantastic all season.
Well, it's created a five-point cushion, I think, now between them and Bayern Munich. So, yeah, title charge looks more realistic than ever, which is amazing. And, Dave, I'm going to zip over to Spain for you in the other top-of-the-table clash between Real Madrid and Girona, which finished 4-0, which, again, was another emphatic win. Real Madrid were fantastic, weren't they? And you see the team that's coming together now and the talent they've got really working. Jude Bellingham, obviously, I think he scored a brace, but he's out injured for a little while. But it doesn't feel like they'll drop off massively because they've got someone like Vinicius Jr. in the team who, again, in this game was absolutely unplayable. And Carlo Ancelotti said after the game, and I want to get both your thoughts on this, that Vinny Jr. at the moment is the best player in the world on current form. Do you think that's close to the mark? How would you rate his form at the moment and his ability?
I don't think he's far wide of the mark for that, to be honest. I think if you look at especially how he's performed in Europe and in the last couple of years, especially, he's a constant nuisance and threat. And it's just really difficult to deal with, isn't it? I think he's definitely, for me, one of the most difficult players to defend against in the game. But I don't think there was any real surprises in this game. I think a lot of people expected, especially Girona, have actually struggled over the last few weeks. They were on a real good run at one point and they've sort of had a little bit of a stutter of late. But I think it's just actually quite refreshing to see them, you know, contending, obviously, with Real Madrid and Barcelona, who've been used to for so many years, and obviously Atletico as well. Been used to so many years with the same old names, haven't we? And for them to actually come to the fore and to, you know, compete with Real Madrid shows how far they've come as a team and a unit. I think, like you say, if you got Bellingham and Vinicius in there, they're match winners at the end of the day, and they've done it so many times so far this season. And I think it's hard to see past them winning the league, to be honest.
Yeah, well, to be honest, you were saying how it's refreshing for Girona to be competing, but I'm just quite happy they've been put in their place as one arm of the City football group, to be fair, mate. And it was nice to see City's on-loan defender Jan Couto reduced to tears after the game as well because of the way Vinicius Jr. tormented him all game. So yeah, I'm kind of happy that Real Madrid did this emphatic win and put them back in their place. But yeah, Vinny Jr., Miles, are you impressed by what you've seen so far in this game, especially? Some of the balls he was playing through were just beautiful, weren't they?
Yeah, of course. He's a phenomenal player. His assist for Bellingham, like you mentioned, is insane. I do think there was a bit of lip service taking place here, though, because let's be honest, all the talk around Real Madrid right now is Kylian Mbappe heading over, who we know his favourite position is that forward off the left. Yeah. So I do feel like this is Ancelotti kind of keeping Vinicius happy and trying to keep him at the club by saying, yeah, he's one of the best in the world. So it's either saving face if they don't get Mbappe or kind of tickling the ego of an excellent footballer so you don't have to lose him. Because I saw ridiculous reports that he would be offered to Man United if Kylian Mbappe got signed. You'd take that over Rashford, wouldn't you? Maybe they could do a little like rotation. Send Rashford to PSG, Mbappe to Madrid, and you could have Vinicius. Would you take that, boys? I'm not sure you would. No, I think it's very telling as well. Like, Girona have only lost two games in the league this year, both of which were to Real Madrid, and they're now 5 points behind Madrid. So that if you want to upset the apple cart and overthrow someone like Madrid, then they're the games that you've got to at least get a draw from. And it's a shame for them because, yeah, all right, the City affiliation feels a bit dirty. And obviously City have now secured the signing of Savio for in the summer as well, which looks very dodgy. Mm-hmm. But it would be nice to see someone a bit different in the picture. And I think Real Madrid will probably go through now. I think actually, if Ancelotti is talking about one of the best players in the world being in his team, Vinicius is up there, but Bellingham's got to be right now.
Yeah, well, I think their progression in the Champions League depends on whether he's back in time for, I think, at least the second leg against Leipzig, I think they've got in the next round. Mm. That could be telling, couldn't it? But yeah, Real Madrid look irresistible on current form. That's it for this week's pod, guys. Thank you for your time, attention, and for staying so humble, Dave, in the face of a win over Aston Villa. I thought we held it together pretty well there, guys, and I thought you weren't...
I hate you both.
I thought you weren't too bitter sounding about it either, Miles. So yeah, well played. But yeah, if wherever you're listening to this too, please, as we always say, hop over to our YouTube channel and go and see us over there. Hit subscribe and yeah, join in the community. We've got quite a varied range of football fans watching us now, which is absolutely brilliant. We want that, don't we, rather than just the usual suspects. And we don't talk about just the usual suspects, hopefully, as you've heard from today's pod. So yeah, please do hop over to there and continue to support us. That'd be amazing.
The problem is, though, Mike, if they head over to YouTube and see our faces, you can say you've been humble all you like, but they'll see Dave's smug grin throughout the podcast.
Well, we've had our moments, Dave. So when we take you've our smugness, we have earned it. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, as I was saying, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you soon. Cheers, guys.